So this morning we get a bit of a window into the day-to-day life of Jesus. At one point it says he has the whole city lined up at his door. In the Message it says that. Constant coming and going, hardly time to eat. What's it like in your household at the moment? Sometimes life seems so fast, doesn't it? Out of control, like a constant game of Splat the Rat or something like that, that we're just continually playing. How do we recover from that? How do we take a step back? How do we get vision and strength for our lives? Well, as we approach the summer holidays, I thought it might be an ideal time for us to consider that for a moment, to make space to reflect on our lives and to make some adjustments. So July's holy habit is the practice of slowing, or slowing down, maybe. Now, I went away in March to a retreat, and the retreat centre was at St. Catherine's in London. And my aim was to slow down, to reflect on the pace things are moving at in my life, to examine the rhythms of my family life, to get honest about the condition of my heart with God. How could I be spiritually more healthy? So I took a John Ortberg book with me, and he began by saying, for a healthy spiritual life, a flourishing life, you must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life. Ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life. So I thought, well, that's a good one. I'll make a note of that. Well, now what else? I've only got 2 days here. I've got to walk on the Thames a couple of times. Need to spend time in the chapel. Need to plan where to eat. I think Rosie might be available this evening in London. Definitely I need to visit the yurt just outside the retreat with its wonderful coffee shop and interesting people to talk to. And then prayerfully I need to make a strategic list for my life at St. Mary's so I can really hit the ground running when I get back. Can anybody spot the deliberate mistake? I had 2 days, and ruthlessly eliminating hurry from my life was already number 10 on the list. The whole point of the retreat was probably that there should have been nothing else on the list. Hurry is the adversary of a fruitful spiritual life. Hurry can destroy our souls. It can keep us from living well. Kierkegaard said, the press of busyness is like a charm. Its power swells. It reaches out, seeking always to lay hold of ever younger victims so that childhood or youth are scarcely allowed the space in which the eternal may unfold a divine growth. Ofsted, take note. Carl Jung wrote, hurry is not of the devil. Hurry is the devil. The danger is, isn't it, that we're so preoccupied and distracted the whole time, we settle for a mediocre spiritual life. Everything is half done, half experienced, half-hearted. And we kid ourselves that by cramming a few things in to our day, we'll have more time to invest in our spiritual life later on in the evening. It's interesting, isn't it, that the big changes in the industrial part of our society, the big concern in the revolution, industrial revolution, was that people would be put out of jobs. We'd be so efficient. We'd have so much time. Same with the tech revolution. Productivity was everything. We'd have 20 hours a week was all we probably needed to work. We'd all be able to retire sooner. Well, that worked out well, didn't it? And now with the artificial intelligence revolution underway, how's that going? I'm not sure our biggest problem is going to be what we do with all the time that our efficient jobs are buying us. Quite the reverse. After all, we buy Head and Shoulders to combine the shampoo and dandruff phases of our shampooing in one step, eliminating all that time-consuming rinsing. Domino's, just across the road from us, has become the household pizza name in the country, hasn't it? They deliver within 30 minutes, I know, because they queue up to pick up their pizzas outside our gates. But their CEO said, we don't sell pizza, we sell delivery. Interesting when you're chewing on your margarita. And even after McDonald's invented fast food, we still had to park our cars to go inside and order, didn't we? We had to take our food to a table. So time-consuming. So we invented the drive-through to enable families to eat in their cars, just as nature intended. Jesus was well aware of this kind of problem. He talked about the parable of the sower. The good seed wasn't able to take root. It was strangled often by the weeds. But there was a chance that some would fall on good earth and have a harvest beyond our wildest dreams. If we're constantly pressurized, consumed by the cares and riches of our own lives, we are preventing God from taking root in our hearts. There's no chance of a wonderful harvest in our lives. So, after a period of being very busy, and just before feeding the 5,000, in our reading, Jesus invites his followers to come off by yourselves. Let's take a break and get a little rest. For there was constant coming and going. They didn't even have time to eat. Following Jesus can't be done at a sprint. We can't go faster than the one who is leading. And Jesus wasn't chaotic. Now, that doesn't mean we should never be busy. After all, in our reading it says, "This is why I've come," said Jesus, "to go to their meeting places throughout Galilee, preaching and throwing out demons." So he's constantly on the move, constantly preaching, constantly healing people. But he never did it in a way that severed that life-giving connection between God and him. He never did it in a way that interfered with his relationship with his Father, that interfered with his ability to give love, to reflect the love that he was receiving from his Father to those around him. Those long conversations by the well, those children he wanted to come to him when others would have sent them away. And he simply observed a regular practice of withdrawing from activity into solitude and prayer. So he was busy, but he doesn't appear really to have been hurried. There were times when people were trying to hurry him up and were getting annoyed by his pace. So while it was still night, way before dawn, it says in our reading, Jesus got up and went out to a secluded spot and prayed. That's how he prepared. Early one morning, it says later on, Jesus went off to pray. When he heard about the death of John the Baptist, Jesus went into solitude. When he was going to choose his disciples, Jesus went into solitude. After he had been involved in healing a leper, Jesus went into solitude. After his followers had engaged in ministry and he'd sent them out two by two, he went into solitude. And this pattern continued into the final days of his life, when he again withdrew into the solitude of the Garden of Gethsemane to pray. So he ended his ministry as he began it with the practice of solitude to draw strength from his Father, the strength that he needed for his life. So if we intend to follow Jesus, we would do well to imitate him. Hurry makes us weighed down by the burden of all the things we failed to say no to, the important dates we've missed in our lives. It creates a superficiality in us. Depth always comes slowly. It's a simple truth about human formation. I read about Lincoln that he read less, but thought and reflected more than any man in his sphere in America. More recent presidents might like to take note. But today, we're happy to trade wisdom, aren't we, for information of very dubious value. We even need to take time to look at the pictures of what our friends had for breakfast. Hurry makes it harder to love. Love and hurry are fundamentally incompatible. Love always takes time. Hurry brings anger and frustration, prevents us from receiving love from our Father in heaven, or reflecting that love back out to his people. But the good news is, we can become unhurried people. We can become patient people. Come away to a deserted place, Jesus continues to say to us. Wise followers of Jesus have always understood the necessity and benefit of slowing down for a moment. The Apostle Paul says, don't let the world squeeze you into its mold. But it does take a little practice, doesn't it? It takes a little discipline. So I've just got a couple of habits to suggest this morning that go together in partnership. The first one is slowing down. The big one for me during the day, the place where I can slow down, should slow down, is mealtimes. This is the barometer really of my own life, I think. When I'm stressed, I gulp down my food. At lunchtime, if I'm in the house on my own, I eat standing up, and I eat and wash up while I'm preparing the food. This is where the French can really teach us a thing or two. It's not really the football field. If we eat our meals more slowly and thankfully, preferably eating at times, if we can, with someone else, we'll have time to calm down, to reflect. And if we do that regularly throughout the day at our meal times, that's a really good start. My grandfather always used to say, with his disapproving look, I can see it now, chew each bite 40 times, stop gulping your food, savor your food. And when I remember that, life begins to calm down, and I appreciate my food, my time, and the day ahead. If you study Jesus' approach to life, meals and eating are vital times of recreation in life with his disciples, and they don't appear to have been rushed. There's lots of other opportunities during the day to slow down, maybe driving, maybe while we're working, maybe actually we would work better if we worked slower. I've often found that in my life. Maybe in the supermarket, where we're thrashing around, barging people out of the way, who knows. So the first thing is to actually think about how we slow down to give God a little bit of time in our lives. But we need to find some moments of solitude as well. So that's the second thing. Again, imitating Jesus, in solitude we can find freedom. In solitude, we can reflect on the pressures and temptations, the success, our security, fulfillment and happiness, anger and thankfulness. We can reflect on things that we might not even know are shaping us for good or for worse, unless we occasionally withdraw. But what exactly is solitude? It's quite hard to achieve. I find it hard to practice. What do we bring? Well, nothing, or maybe nothing and a Bible. Just ourselves, away from the conversation, away from the noise, away from the constant barrage of stimulation, away from the screens that interrupt our lives throughout the day. Henry Nguyen said, "In solitude, I get rid of my scaffolding." And as if symbolically, we've got our scaffolding, we've got rid of it under the sheets at the back this week, so you can see. So that's a good visual aid. In solitude, I get rid of my scaffolding. All the stuff we use to keep ourselves propped up, to convince ourselves that we're okay. We come just as we are, vulnerable and open. And Paul, in our reading this morning, gives us a reason why. Paul says, take your everyday, ordinary life, your sleeping, eating, going to work, and walking around life, and place it before God as an offering. It's what we're doing, really, when we imitate Jesus. We're coming to God, surrendering, and placing ourselves in solitude in front of him in surrender. It requires a little willpower. We might need to put it in the calendar to make it happen. And there's probably two types of solitude. There's brief periods of solitude on a regular basis every day, maybe at intervals during the day. For example, we may want to start the day praying over the day's schedule, the people we're likely to be with, and the placing them in God's hands. During the day, maybe take a brief break, if that is possible, and remind ourselves that maybe the office and the business will be gone one day, but we'll still belong to God. At the end of the day, maybe be still for a moment and quiet our mind. Reflect on the day with God. Where do we want to give thanks? What anxieties and regrets do we want to hand over to him? Is God saying something through the experiences of the day? What do we want to pray for? Patience, greater love, courage, forgiveness? Are there people we want to pray for? And then finally, give thanks for God's mercy and love and ask him to refresh us as we sleep. So there's those moments of solitude during the day, but maybe we need extended times alone. I tried to explain what my retreats were like. I hope you're not too discouraged by that. But in the end, they're often very, very helpful to me. I try to withdraw and do this sort of thing about once a month if I can, and sometimes for 2 days. Kirsty's put 3 days in my diary, actually, in August, down in London again. John Ortberg reminds us of the old grandfather clocks. They needed resetting and rewinding twice a day, just like us, in a way. Once in the morning, once in the evening. But then those old grandfather clocks, once a year, are taken apart. The dirt that's clogging it is taken away, and the bent parts are straightened. So for us, we probably need those daily moments of thankfulness and filling, but occasional extended times for honesty and healing. Bit of a plug, next year, New Wine is going to move to Peterborough, which is wonderful news for us because it's very close. And so Debbie and I will be leading a party. Hopefully lots of you will want to join in. We'll be camping, so if you want to camp with us on a field for New Wine next summer, that would be great. Or you can, if you're not up to that, you can come and stay in a hotel. There's lots of hotels in Peterborough, and you can come in for the day. But that might be a chance when we as a church go away for a little bit of solitude, if you like. Spiritual review is important, but it's hard. It's hard to be with God for extended periods. Because sometimes you feel, always in my case, you feel uncomfortable to begin with. So I'd be delighted to help you prepare if you feel you need some help thinking that through. But if you need encouragement, there are the words of Brother Lawrence, who says, "For many years I was bothered by the thought that I was a failure at prayer. Then one day I realized I would always be a failure at prayer." I've gotten along much better ever since then," he said. So this summer, during our holidays, if we get a little bit of extra space in our lives, let's practice a better way to live. Slow down and find a little solitude, spending time with God our Father, who loves us and who gives good gifts to those who ask him. Let's sit with God. Let's let him fill us with his Spirit and then send us out to do those things that he has gifted us to do. So it's a holy habit. So there's a little bit chance now to have a bit of a discussion. So hopefully there's a question that'll come up on the screen. It is said that hurry is the great enemy of spiritual life in our generation. It can destroy our souls and keep us from living well. How have you experienced the destructive power of hurry in your life? And is there something you might want to do differently this summer? Do you want to spend a few minutes just thinking about that with your neighbor next to you, if you don't mind? You don't have to talk if you don't want to. Obviously, you can remain silent, close your eyes. That's absolutely fine. But if you want to have a little chat with your neighbor, you might learn from each other. That'd be great. Bring us all back together now. Is anybody got anything that they're brave enough to say or would like to share that the rest of us would find helpful?